Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. It's been a long time since we spoke.
It's been so long. Somebody mowing back there?
Yeah, someone's, working on a leaf blower, lawnmower. I don't know what it
yard
is. Windows
work.
Are open.
The bane,
yard work.
The bane favorite. Of home podcasters everywhere.
And the favorite chore of pirates. Yard work.
Arg.
Yes. Yes. You're welcome, everybody. Well, this was the shortest secret podcast on record.
Bye, Dan. all the public betas came out.
All of them.
All of them. Release the hounds.
Wow.
All of the public betas.
I'm going to be holding off on High Sierra, probably.
I can't. At some point, I have to give into it, but, like... I need some computer somewhere, some system somewhere that is reliable. And going to the beta on the Mac, it's like that's my last refuge for reliability if I'm using, because I'm on iOS 11 now on my iPads, but like on the Mac, this is where I do the bulk of my podcast editing and recording, right? And this is the closest thing I have to a production machine where like it needs to work. And at some point, what's going to happen is I will, like in a month or 6 weeks, I will update to High Sierra, at which point... Hi, Sierra.
Hello, Sierra.
Just sending this one out to Sierra. At that point, I will probably install... before I upgrade to High Sierra, I will probably install a generic installation What are we on now?
Sierra.
Low Sierra. Foothills, where I grew up. I'll put that on my external drive where I currently have High Sierra. So I have a refuge, because that was my problem 2 years ago, is that El Capitan broke a bunch of my stuff. And so for the whole summer, people would be like, hey, let's do a Skype call and do a podcast. And I'd say, okay, please wait while I reboot into my generic... external drive, or it was a partition at that point, generic partition of the old operating system, because I couldn't use the current operating system when it was in beta. So that's why
I usually do it on my laptop first, because though I do count on my laptop for many things, it is at the end of the day less crucial, because I don't generally record podcasts on it unless I'm traveling.
Here's the thing, I can't really do that, because I am going to have to take screenshots at some point, and I can't take screenshots on a non-Retina computer. So I have to do it on the iMac, because I'm not going to take non-Retina screenshots. That would be just disgusting.
That is how I live, Jason, at least for another few hours here.
Your Mac is a non-Retina world for now. Is your iMac coming? Did you buy an iMac?
It's coming today, yeah. Yeah, very exciting. It could arrive during the secret podcast, or that would be exciting.
Wow. That would be amazing. Then we do the unboxing on the podcast, which would involve lots of rustling sounds.
A lot of peeling like plastic off of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago today, you were in line. I was looking at your tweets. I was looking at your tweets. You were in line.
As Phil Michaels put it, he dispatched his underlings to go wait in line so he could be in the office.
Yep. I was in the office too. I also dispatched my underlings. Good times.
Yeah, we underlings sat in the hot baking sun. I remember it was quite a warm day.
I'm sure it was freezing and unpleasant in San Francisco in the line.
Oh, that sounds about
so,
right.
Sorry to Matt and Brian Chen. Yeah.
I sat in a baking parking lot of the AT&T store near my parents' house. And there were not as many people there as there were at many of the Apple stores. But I had figured maybe that was my best chance for getting one, because there were no pre-orders or anything, as I recall. Like, I think you just had to wait in line.
I think that's right.
Yeah, like, the most impressive thing to me is watching how the system has changed over the years in terms of getting an iPhone. Like, it's still kind of a pain sometimes, especially because, for me, I've done the iPhone upgrade program thing now for the last few years. So as secret podcast listeners will know, we did a secret podcast last year when I was at the Apple store waiting for my new phone to get set up. So I still end up going to stores and waiting in lines, which is a little annoying. But it certainly has gotten a lot smoother than it was in those first couple of years where you would show up and just be like, I'm going to get in line and I don't even know if I have a phone or not. Like, at least when I got in line last year, I had reserved that and pre-ordered it. I just needed to go in to do, like, the handoff of phones. So, you know, that's a little different than getting in line and wondering, like, will I even manage to get one? So, yeah, that was a very different... I mean, nothing has been like that first line. None of the, you know, none of the subsequent years were like that. Although, it also makes me think back to my earliest days. I think the year... must have been the year before that, where I went to the Apple store in the Cambridgeside Galleria here, and there was a line for people picking up their copy of Leopard. There's a line for a macOS software release, which is just really bizarre to That's think bananas. Of today, right?
For so many different reasons.
Yeah, and like I remember, because I was interviewing people in line for the Mac user blog, and like, why are you, like, what are you waiting for? What are you excited about? And people are like, oh yeah, Time Machine. It's like, yeah, there's people waiting in line because they're excited about a backup system.
About backup.
How the world has changed in those 10 years.
Wow, no kidding. That is crazy.
Yeah, and I also was recalling on the Rebound earlier this week, we were talking about the 10th anniversary bit, and I don't even know if you can still find this post because it was on the iPhone Central blog, which I think is long dead. And it was about how the first iPhone I had, like the next day or something, or even maybe that evening, it died.
Huh.
Like, it bricked. Like, you couldn't even turn it on. And I took it to... I really didn't know what to do. I think I called the AT&T store and they're like, we don't have any more. Like, you can't exchange it. And I was like, So I ended up going to the Apple store near my parents' house and took it in. And they're like, well, but you didn't buy this here. I'm like, but it's your phone, right? Like,
right.
You guys made this. And they're like, hold on. And then they like went into the back room, found a manager or whatever, came back out and like, yeah, we'll swap it out for you. So they gave me a new phone there.
Yeah, you're literally the manufacturer of this device.
Exactly. They had not figured out quite what they were doing with that yet because it was day one, right? Like, they didn't have all the systems in place now. Like, nowadays, it doesn't matter where you buy your iPhone. You take it into the Apple store, they'll fix it or replace it or whatever if it's in warranty or they'll service it if not. But they, you know, in 2007, that nobody had brought in a dead iPhone yet because it was day one. And they did swap it out for me. And I, a few hours after that, because I had blogged about it, I got a note from Apple PR asking if, like, oh, we saw this, can we take care of this? I'm like, it was already taken care of. Thank you. Don't worry about it. So I think I had one of the very first dead iPhones, basically. Which is kind of hilarious.
Congratulations.
I guess. Yeah. Maybe that's in some sort of weird achievement.
Mm.
I don't know.
How lucky you are. I still have mine. I have it.
Yeah, me too.
I have it right here.
I did not plug it in. I thought about dragging it out today, but I just reorganized all my old iPhone boxes and it's buried now. So
Here.
Up there. It's up there safe.
Here's
somewhere.
Some classic noises.
Oh,
I just unlocked it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slide to unlock. When you plug it in, it goes, doo-doo. Classic. It's all good.
It's, yeah.
You know, it's an iPhone. It is noticeably an iPhone, although iPhone OS 3 is funny. It's got, you know, it's got the pinstripes in the background and the heavy kind of like gray gradient top and the big arrow buttons for like the back buttons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Buttons that look like buttons.
I still hear marimba on TV shows all the time. It's like the universal sound of a phone ringing now is marimba.
Like a classic like buzzer telephone, right? Like with an actual bell in it. It's like that.
Yeah.
It's that iconic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's 10 years.
It feels it still feels pretty good to hold it too, I got to say.
It's nice. It's a nice piece of hardware.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fan. I feel like Johnny Ive knew exactly what he wanted to make and couldn't make it, but he made as close to it as they could get engineering wise. And then over the years, with the exception of the 3G and the 3GS, I feel like they have continued to sort of like push in that direction, right up to the present day. But just that idea of the glass slab and, you know, we can, the jet black model notwithstanding, you know, the metal back of the modern iPhones is still you know, you can see the curves, the metal back, the glass front. It's like, this has been a direction that Apple has been going, with the exception of that 3G and 3GS, where it was like, yeah, we're just going to put a plastic back on there. It's way easier. it gets the signal out. It's easier to make. It's cheaper. Let's do that. Polycarbonate back. Let's do it. But with that one as the exception, and the 5C, I suppose, which is like the little junior.
Well, but that way, I mean, we did also have 3G. The 4 and the 4S had the glass back, too.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird, right? I feel like the 5, for me, the 4 design language continued in the 5, but I feel like the 5...
They did a much better job of refining it.
...is the one that's like the height of that look, which is maybe my favorite iPhone look. But I think there's a lot to commend the first iPhone.
Yeah. And as you said, the current model, you know, the 6 series and up, 6, 6S, 7, all kind of evoke that.
Yeah, for
sure.
With
the curved sides and all that. So,
yeah, curved sides are exactly... I mean, they're not as noticeable because it's so much thinner. But right. The curved sides and everything, it's like part of the vision that obviously that Apple and Johnny Ive have had for where they're taking this thing.
I just took my iPhone 7 out of the case for the first time in a while just to like look at the form factor of it and was like, oh my God, this thing is so slippery.
Yeah.
I almost dropped it. Go back in your case. Go back in your case.
Yeah, it's a bar of soap. Save Unless you get the jet black. You get the jet black. It's not.
Yeah. This year. Well, maybe this year. We'll see if there's a jet black option.
We'll see what you get. But anyway, yeah. Hey, happy birthday to the iPhone. I was looking at my first pictures that I took with the iPhone.
And I think I lost mine because I had like... The first one, for some reason, I screwed something up along the way, either the first one or the second one, and instead of doing an update, I ended up with a restore, and so, like, there's a break somewhere very early in my iPhone history, so I don't have, or at least I couldn't find, the first pictures I took with my iPhone.
Yeah, fortunately, I found, you know, IMG_0002 and up. I think number one I must have deleted it. It must have been like blurry or nothing or something.
Right,
but,
sure.
But I've got, and it's pictures of my family in the car as we were headed out to my that vacation where we were up in the mountains at the camp where I had to write the review, and I was frantically like trying to do things like use the internet while I could, because I knew when we got to camp we would lose signal. So. Yeah, so it's a whole bunch of pictures of my family in the car and then my kids running around when we got to the camp. And they are incredibly young because it was 10 years ago. So my son would have been 2 and my daughter would have been 5.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is...
She drives now.
Yeah, that's a whole different world there. Yep. I was thinking that the when I used to get I got my first iPhone, and one of the first things I did with it was call my friend Jason Tosi, and then I used to call him with like when I got my subsequent like new iPhones, like to like inaugurate the iPhone. I realized I haven't done that in years because who the hell uses a phone anymore?
Yeah, send him a text.
Yeah, exactly.
Take a picture of the box of your new phone from your old phone.
It's become not even, since I've done it like almost every year, I think I've only missed one iPhone model, and that was the 5S. But like, it's, you know, it's not even a thing now. Like, yeah, it's lost its novelty. We'll put it that way. Like, I still like getting a new phone, but I don't feel the need to like commemorate it in an inaugural, like break a bottle of champagne over it or anything.
Yeah.
It's just a phone.
It's part of life.
It's just a phone. Yeah. It's old hat. So I got a piece going up soon, hopefully, on iOS 11 beta and some thoughts on using that for the last few weeks.
Oh, nice.
I started writing about stuff, and I realized that the stuff that I really was going to spend a lot of time on was like multitasking, basically, because obviously that's quite a lot of change in iOS 11. But there are a whole bunch of other things that are really interesting, and I got the end, I was like, oh my God, I could keep writing about different aspects of this for a long time. I'm already like 1600 words in, and it's like, you know, this is gonna be a gradual process. We're gonna be spending a lot of weeks with this, a lot of months with this before the full version comes out, so I'm not gonna try to cover everything, and stuff's gonna change probably and be refined, etc. So here's a couple things that jumped out at me in my first few weeks of using it. And a lot of them have to do with multitasking, because as I said, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest changes, and it's required the biggest adjustments in terms of like rewiring my muscle and brain memory about how to do things. And yeah, I don't know. There are still some puzzling choices in there, and it will be interesting to see what gets ironed out and what Apple just decides, like, nope, that's as we intended. That is the way we are making this. But there's definitely going to be a little bit of each, and there's probably going to be a lot of frustration with the stuff in the latter, because there often is when it comes to Apple, right? Like, they make a decision, and they're like, yeah, this is the way we think this should work. And sometimes they change that much later, right? Like that iOS 12 or 13 down the road, they might decide to refine some of this. Or they might just decide, no, we're pretty happy with that, and you guys will adjust to how that works.
Yeah, that's always the question in the summer is, this seems obviously a mistake. Are they going to see that, or are they going to just double down? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have issues. I've been thinking of writing a story that's basically like, it's the equivalent of what Matt Panzerino has been posting in his Twitter feed, which is, these things don't work right. Like, this is not right. Like, Notification Center, some of it is wrong. Some of it is broken.
That lock screen thing where you swipe down and get the lock screen, that makes zero sense to me.
See, I kind of like it. Because it happens all the time that I unlock my phone and I have notifications and they're gone before I can read them, and I want to see them and they're not on my notification center.
Yeah, but why not just put them in notification center and fix that problem rather than having something that looks like a lock screen but is not a lock screen?
Look like the lock screen. That is super weird. That is super weird.
I give you that. Like, I think functionality wise, having all your notifications accessible when you swipe down, A+, fine, totally on board with that. But the making it look like a lock screen is very odd, because your device is not locked now, but it might look like it's locked, which is potentially a security problem. It's just a weird decision. I don't entirely get it. So there's a lot of little weird adjustment stuff in there. I finally got better. Like, I know you mentioned at one point that you thought it was less, you can't bring up the not playing thing as fast.
In
Control Center.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have gotten very used to being able to, like, you can just sort of do one swipe all the way up and skip swiping the dot. Like, and I found, like, once I sort of retrained my brain for that, that was not as bad. But there's the one thing that keeps getting me, and I wrote about this in the piece, that I find just totally, I have a really hard time wrapping my brain around, is you drag something off the dock. So you could drag an icon off the dock and make like a little slide over window. That's fine. It kind of makes sense. Sure. You drag an icon off, it makes a window, it expands, blah, done. But in my head, logically speaking, I then, if I want to get rid of that window, I want to like drag it back down because I'm like, oh, I pulled it out. I should be able to put it away. But that turns it into a split screen. And in order to get rid of it, you have to like swipe it off the screen. And it took me a while to figure that out when I first started using it. And even now, I just find it, it's awkward because it's like the equivalent of somebody running onto stage and then be like, hey, I'm here. I'm going to go off over this entirely different direction. It's like, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense, but it also feels weird. Pulling down to fit something into the side, I don't know. I don't quite get for like the sort of kinetic feeling they're going for there.
I think Control Center is not right. Like the fact that you can't touch and hold or 3D touch to quickly set a
Wi-Fi network.
Set a Wi-Fi network, pair with Bluetooth. The fact that AirPlay, separate from screen mirroring, AirPlay, you have to tap and hold on the now playing and then have it expand and then do it. I use that quite frequently, and now it is a tap and a wait for the expansion away on top of that swipe.
And that's super frustrating if you're like, my thing is, I get in a car sometimes and it starts trying to pair while I'm in the car and I'm on a phone call, and because all of a sudden the person can't hear you, you're on a different device, and it's like, oh, let me change the, you know, audio output, and it's far less convenient.
And then the one that really gets me is sometimes I'm reading something on my iPad and the screen is a little too dim or a little too bright. And in iOS 10, what you do is you flip up the little Control Center, and then you grab the brightness control. And then while you're sliding it, it shows you the brightness it's going to be. And the bulk of what's on your screen at that point is the thing you were just looking at. So you can literally sit there with a web page open and go, I want this to be a little brighter, a little dimmer, and you let go, and Control Center goes away, and now that screen is exactly what you want it to be. With this approach, you swipe up, what you were viewing gets reduced down to a tiny thumbnail, and then you're supposed to figure out what the right brightness level is for it, and you can't preview it anymore because there's no preview there. That's the only way you can adjust the brightness, is out of context. It's a mistake. It's just you provided a very clear context. It was a really great feature. I used it all the time, and now it's like, no, you better just guess. Guess, and if you're wrong, just do it again. Swipe all the way up and then tap on the thing and then slide up and down and then then tap back in and see if that's any better. So
it's even more baffling if you do that from the lock screen, because not only is the Control Center stuff in the same place where it's all shoved over to one side, but it basically just blurs out the background, so you have just like a huge chunk of empty, blurry space.
Of nothing.
So like
nothingness, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing there. And again, you can't tell because it's all blurred out when you're adjusting the brightness. It's a lot harder to tell, like, is that going to make this the right brightness or not? Yeah, that's perplexing.
Yeah, it's no good. Plus, you should be able to, like, drag them around and stuff.
Well, I don't understand. We're going to make this customizable, but only kind of.
Only a little bit.
Yeah, in slightly weird ways.
Yeah, so the question is, what happens now? Because like you said, do they say, oh, you'll get used to it? Or are they like, oh, we didn't think of that. That's a pretty good point. We ought to try to find a way to solve that. And, really the answer is using the feedback app if you're on the public beta, or using a radar if you're a developer and have access to the developer ticketing system, and saying, here's where you got this wrong. It needs to be tweaked. It very clearly, there are some issues, some assumptions that they've made that don't work.
Yeah, the getting arbitrary apps into multitasking, totally befuddling, that you got to either swipe back through your history, which is really little better than when you had that scrolling list on the side, or you got to hope that it shows up in that like smart doc space.
A point that CGP Grade made on Twitter yesterday, I think, that I also agree with, is I was always advocating for the ability to pair apps together, because sometimes apps really do go well together, and it does that. But the problem is that now it has this idea that there are apps that pair together, and that's where they belong, is they belong together. Right. And I understand that for complexity's sake, you might want to not have... there may be technical reasons why they didn't do this, but like, if I want one app to be a pair with two different apps in two different scenarios, why not let me do that? Why not let me have Slack running on the side of my text editor and on the side of my Twitter client? But that's not how it works. Like, you can do one or the other, but when you add it to one, it goes away from the other, because they don't think that. And I don't understand why you would think that was how people worked, unless it's just very clearly a technical issue of like, well, if you have it there, then you have it. It's only remembering its window status of this. It's going to have to redraw it if you go back, and what's the UI? And I'm like, I get that it's complicated, but it seems like this is a linkage, like a limitation that you probably shouldn't make. And maybe this is as simple as this is a first cut at this UI, and that it needs to be simple before it gets more complex later. But like, I've had that already. It's way better than what was there before, but I've already had that moment of like, oh, I can't, if I put this app here now, then it's going to go away from that other place where I like it. And that's it's too bad that it can't do that. That said, it is pretty amazing to have split screen apps and then other split screen apps, and just like command tab back and forth between them, and it's fast, and you got all those apps doing their thing. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I was one of the things I remarked on in this thing, in writing this, is that with slide over and split screen, they now operate at the same time, which you could not do before. And so you can have three apps all working on screen at the same time. It's not ideal because slide over covers an app, but I kind of like that because it's it feels like a relaxing, like Apple has always worked very hard to make iOS feel very safe and very elegant in a way that is like, we're not going to let you do things that we feel like break the atmosphere or the feeling that we're trying to create with this. And to a certain extent, it kind of feels like now they're like, we're not going to get in your way. Like, you want to have a window overlapping like your window? Go ahead. Like, it's not going to be super usable because you're going to be covering your content, but we're going to assume that that's what you want to do and we're going to let you do it. So I find that kind of refreshing because it feels like a philosophical change where, you know, if I got two apps in split screen and I'm like, oh, I want to check Twitter, I can like pop Twitter over one of it, like look at it for a few seconds and then get it off the screen and go back to having my two split screen apps there. So that feels like a move in the right direction to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm all in on iOS 11 on my iPads, right? It's like, forget it. It's over. I'm never going back. Like, that's it. There's some stuff that doesn't work. I don't care. I'm in all the way. It's too much better. It's so much better on my iPads, not on my iPhone. I don't see the point.
Yeah. iPhone. Well, they really, there is not as much added to the iPhone. The big question I have is, the drag and drop has been interesting because it's clearly not implemented across most third-party apps. It sometimes works, like, but just not necessarily smart. It doesn't work quite the way you'd expect it to. But what I'm super interested in is if you, like, they've kind of overloaded the tap and hold mechanic. Because previously, if you went into, say, Safari, and you tap and you held on a link, it would pop up a contextual menu with a bunch of options. Now, it turns into a draggable item, and you have to keep holding if you want that contextual menu to come up. Which I find is kind of wacky, because it introduces that same problem that you just discussed with, you have to wait for something to happen now. And although I know drag and drop isn't fully implemented on the iPhone side, you have 3D touch there. So now you have 3D touch on the phone and you have drag and drop on the iPad, and they both kind of use the same mechanics, but they don't do the same thing.
Right.
And so that's super puzzling because now you've kind of even more deliberately forked your iOS, you know, iPad versus iPhone versions. And I am just super curious to see how people handle that because it is kind of confusing.
It's the whole divergence of, like, this is one of the challenges Apple has in making the iPad good as an iPad and the iPhone good as an iPhone, is that there are going to be these places of divergence where, like, do you break behavior for consistency purposes? Or do you keep them together for platform consistency purposes? And, yeah, I mean, my feeling is you just got to break it apart, that, like, the iPad needs to do stuff that the iPhone doesn't, and the iPhone probably needs to do stuff the iPad doesn't, because they need to be true to themselves. And they're still running iOS, but the contexts are different. Just like, you know, maybe what you would do on an iMac and a MacBook might be different depending on your pointing devices and stuff like that. And I think I'm okay with it, but it is weird, right?
It is weird, and it's tricky because, you know, certainly iOS was always promulgated on the idea of being like a simpler, more elegant approach to these things, right? Like we've broken it down to the basics of what you need to do, and we're going to sort of build it up again rather than porting over all those assumptions from the computer. And that's fine, but at a certain point, as I think we've discussed previously, that doesn't work anymore because you need more complexity, because as these devices get more capable and people use them for more things, there is additional complexity because you need to figure out how to, you know, add functionality that isn't there. And, you know, we see that in examples like the copy and paste highlighting stuff on iOS. It's fine. It works. It's never been great. Yeah. I still struggle with it. And they've tried ways around that, like using 3D touch on iOS. And I've struggled with that as well because I find it incredibly imprecise. But, you know, this is a challenge when you make your devices more complex and need to continue adding functionality in them as they develop over time. And I think you're right that there is probably some splintering that needs to go on here. But the trick is going to be, is not knowing this stuff going to make it difficult for other users? Or are we just going to have like a bunch of classy users who, like, I'm still using my iPad the way I was, I don't know that this feature exists, and I'm not going to worry about it because I'm very comfortable using things the way they are. And the answer might be, yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of people who probably don't use keyboard shortcuts on their Mac because they've just never invested the time in learning, or they know how to do what they need to do, and they don't worry about it. And so, you know, in some ways, we're recreating that paradigm on iOS as well.
Yeah. We should probably go, but at some point we need to talk about the Amazon Echo show.
That's our new show.
The show goes
on.
The Amazon Echo show?
Yeah, the Amazon Echo show.
And what we do is we do that as a video chat on the Echo show, and then record ourselves while we're doing the video chat, and then release that as a flash briefing.
That sounds perfectly logical.
Why not?
Yeah, I think people are dying to know.
Here's your flash briefing. Everything horrible. Oh God, somebody do something. That's been your flash briefing.
2017.
Yeah, and 16. And maybe 18. Yeah, so we'll talk about that. Maybe next week we'll talk about
it. I think that's a device that needs to... I think it needs to sit for
a little while. Yeah, I'm already... I mean, it also needs some software updates and things. Like,
yep.
It keeps wanting to show me, like, here's this wacky trend. What you can say
please,
to get it to the...
Stop.
It's like it's in demo mode. Like, you know what?
Yeah,
I don't want
yep.
you to sell me any of your things right now. I want to see, like, what's coming up for my family and, like, the weather. So if first thing I wanted to do is I want a customization for the home screen, basically.
100%.
Where I can say, like, show me this stuff, show me... And offer me channels of content and let me choose them. But the last thing I want is a
randomly selected...
Well, it's like, you know how they have, with a lot of electronics, they have, like, a demo mode?
Yeah,
like
when you go to the store.
My car stereo actually had this, and my battery ran down on my car the other week, and we had to jumpstart it, and I was driving it around, and I realized that my car stereo had gone back into factory demo mode, where it, like, blinks the lights and says Bluetooth and support for satellite radio and all these things, like, streaming across it, because it's supposed to, like, that's what it does when it's mounted in a showroom somewhere, and that's what the Echo show reminds me of, is it's in demo mode where Amazon's just gonna, like, keep telling you things you can do with this thing. It's like, look, if I ask, fine, but, like, I want to be able to say, all right, Amazon, show me what the weather is and my calendar.
Or my next calendar appointment or whatever. I will say, as I think I told you yesterday when we did our brief video chat on the Echo show, my hack for it right now is just put it in do not disturb mode, because then it just shows the time. And it doesn't, like, light up every time you walk in the room, and it doesn't have the endlessly cycling, here's your headline, here's some weird, not even your headlines, here's a weird story that I picked from somewhere that you might be interested in. I don't know why I think you might be interested in it.
There's no way to know.
Software updates seem like they are probably coming, but this is definitely a first version of this device. But I do think it's also something that, you know, I saw a lot of people like, I plugged it in for 20 minutes and decided it wasn't for me. I'm like, I honestly feel like it needs longer than that in order, like, at least for me to make a decision. Like, I can't, because I'm going to put it in there and then I'm just going to see how I use it organically. I don't think it's any worse than my old Echo, but is it better? Good question.
Yeah, I put it in the same place as the old one. I'm intrigued by some of the things that it could do, but again, it's going to take some time. Like, I am, open to the idea of a video flash briefing or an augmented with images flash briefing from a news source, if they wanted to try that. I like the idea of being able to say, to tune in some live video somewhere. I know it supports Amazon's video and movie library, but, like, I'm intrigued by the possibilities of things like me saying, show me this baseball game that I have on MLB TV, and having it be like, yeah, I can do that. It will show my Arlo camera.
It will also show YouTube videos.
Yes, I did,
which is pretty handy
if you know the right thing to search for.
And
that's pretty cool, because you could also be like, you know, is, can you show me a YouTube video about how to make this thing that I'm trying to make in the kitchen? And like,
that's exactly what I use it for.
And it's like, that's pretty cool. Right. So I feel like it actually has huge potential, but it's a bit like it's like that. I'm going to bring it all around here at the end, Dan. It's like the original iPhone, where it did some things, and then you saw all of the potential for other things that it could do once it was opened up to third parties, or that Apple got a little time to iterate and add some complexity to it. But the first version was kind of like, it just does what it does, and it's pretty bare bones. And that's what the Echo Show feels like right now. It's brand new, and although they had a few partners who tried to get things out for the launch of this thing, like, it's going to take some time for the services. And even though I have that rule of like, don't buy a piece of hardware because of future promises, Amazon has shown with the original Echo that it is constantly updating and improving the what gets offered on this platform. So I believe that it will, you know, it will get a lot better. But right now it's just kind of, it's an Echo with a screen that sometimes shows you things that are relevant and sometimes doesn't.
Yeah, fast iteration has been the name of the game with the original Echo. So I hold out hope that they're going to be quickly tweaking this as they go.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, well, that's the secret podcast for this time. You check your email, check your spam filters if you have to. The latest newsletter did come out. I sent it out this morning. It's got 5 articles in it like it usually does. There's kind of a theme because I talk a little bit about my about using the iPad. And you and Stephen Hackett both talk about like Mac stuff. So it's a kind of a fun little back and forth.
We cover a little everything.
There's a little bit of everything in there and some nonsense at the end, because that's your job, is to write the nonsense that's at the end.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody reads the nonsense at the end, but sure.
Why not? If you don't get there, then you're missing out, because it's like, what wacky thing will Dan do next?
Oh, my God. I got to stop. Oh, the pressure every month to come up with something more nonsensical.
Just be boring some month.
Yeah, I've done it.
That'll be the prank.
I can easily do that.
All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.